I was asking you whether you felt there was any kind of concerted effort to build a program in physical organic chemistry.
I wouldn't have known about it if there had been.
Yeah.
Either Frank Westheimer or Frank Mayo might know more about that than I did. Actually, Karash was always something of a lone wolf, and at least in subsequent years, it was one of these large trees in the shade of which other things don't grow very well.
Yes. I think I had I was an undergraduate in Chicago, but he died shortly after I got there, but I had that same impression from just talking to people around.
I'm sure he had strong ideas about how the department should be run, but I don't know what they were.
Yeah. H.C. Brown also worked with Karash.
He worked for a year or so for Karash as a postdoc.
Okay, and he took his
degree with Schlesinger.
Okay. And then he stayed on for a while during the wartime period with Schlesinger,
Yeah. Or whoever that group was, he was there.
Okay.
He's written extensively on this.
Yes, I haven't gotten to that, but I will. What was the well, you've mentioned the Karash seminars, and I wondered what else, what the climate was like as far as chemical communication went. What other seminars did you attend? Who did you talk to about chemistry?
No other formal ones. The only meeting or anything which I ever remember going on that Paul came and gave some lectures there once, and that's about the only event outside of Karash's group that I can remember.
Mm-hmm. Who are the people you were talking to? Frank Mayo, obviously.
Yeah.
And were there others that you discussed chemistry with?
Not a great deal. One of the more able people in the group was one of Ernie May, who went back to work for the Family Concern in Newark, which was a dye company.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him once about 20 years ago. I have no idea what happened to him subsequently.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't many others that overlapped with me that I could.
Obviously, you were reading papers in free radical chemistry at that time. Do you remember whose papers you were reading aside from those you quoted in the review article? Who did you think were the most influential chemists in the country, in the world?
Well, probably cited everything I read in the review article. Well, I remember being advised when I was a little abroad after my summer of my senior year in college, and being advised to get a copy of Huckel's two-volume book on theoretical organic chemistry, which I duly bought in Heidelberg and took home with me and tried to read German for a long time. The kind we were advised, for instance, just to do things like the book by Hickenbottom on organic synthesis, which is that how to make everything out of everything, which one was advised to read and sort of commit to memory. Gilman's two-volume work, that was another. Gilman's. I didn't read much theoretical. It was mostly a matter of reading, just committing enough organic. Well, the very sensible feeling that one really needed to know an enormous number of facts of organic chemistry before you could begin thinking about theory.
Mm-hmm.
It's contrasted with the Prescott approach. Having listened to George Wieland, I was briefly taken with the idea that maybe quantum mechanics was the solution to organic chemistry, so I went and sat in on some of the courses in atomic and molecular spectra and things of that sort over in physics.
Mm-hmm.
Took a course in couple of math courses, but I decided at that point it was too difficult. It was quicker to do experiments. But there was sort of a wave of that sentiment then, it appears
throughout. I think we're back into the cycle right now.
Very much so.
There's some question as to whether...
we have computers now, which would really help. But then the calculations were impossibly tedious in those days.
When Tyree even told me about the work that he did with Kirkwood at that time, it was really...
Yeah, in fact, I was going to quote that. I mean, here's something that's just be a trivial exercise now.
Yes.
It took a long time to do the arithmetic calculator.
Right. There was, at least from the review article, I got the impression that there was a great deal of interest in that abnormal addition problem, and that people like Lucas and Young and Winston had done some work, and there was work by some Japanese workers, Uru Shibera and
Takayashi.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Sherman, Quimby, and Sutherland.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a sense of was there a sense of competition with these other groups within the Karaj group?
Well, it certainly wasn't a part of Karaj.
Yes, I had the feeling that he was sort of combative or
competitive. Yeah, he was. Now, I read these papers, of course, and I was aware of old history, and I wrote up the drafts of the papers that were published in my thesis, and I remember Frank telling me that Karaj might want to change the introductions to them a little bit to make sure that they were consistent with his viewpoint, but I figured that was his privilege.
Do you remember his doing so, or?
Well, just a matter of emphasis. Because some of his early ideas turned out not to be very realistic, and he didn't want these reviews in too much detail.
I see. When you graduated, what kind of chemist did you feel you were at that particular point? Could you have titled yourself?
Well, I'm sure I thought of myself as an organic chemist, and I was had I been free to do whatever I wanted in chemistry, I'm not quite sure what I would have done, because I hadn't had the necessity of making up my mind.
Mm-hmm. Somehow you've implied that you were directed in some way.
Well, there weren't very many jobs. There was only one good academic job that came up that I heard about and got applied for, which was recommended for, which is a position at Rochester. And I went and had an interview there, and it turned out that the two prime contenders for the job were myself and Ted Cairns.
Mm-hmm.
They decided to take Ted Cairns. And I was offered a job at the DuPont Company, which was the only other job offer I got. I went to DuPont, and he went to Rochester, and a little bit later we switched.
Yes, I had the feeling
he didn't. I don't remember how long he stayed at Rochester or what led him to go back to DuPont, but.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so you went to DuPont because there was a job there?
Yeah.
And, where are the Jackson Labs? Are they in?
They're in Deepwater, New Jersey, the Chambers Works, the big dye works across from. Wilmington.
Okay.
I guess that was the biggest, one of the biggest DuPont plants, and those are all their dye industry, and most of their synthetic organic chemistry work was.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what your starting salary was at that time?
Yeah, $2,700.
Everybody remembers what their starting salary was.
That's quite a lot of money there.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. What kinds of things did you do there?
Well, I started out working on Stays or Dies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really just a matter of synthesizing new ones and mm-hmm. having them tested. Although I remember even at that point being a little conscious of the fact that one wasn't quite that sure of their composition. Particularly, I was making metallized azo dyes, which are chelate, mostly chromium complexes, but also other transition metals. And nobody ever really bothered to analyze them.
Mm-hmm.
Just looked at the colors. And I was a little conscious of the fact that the, one of the most important properties of a dye was its light fastness. And no one made any effort to find out why some dyes were fast and others weren't, except by looking at the structures and seeing if they could see a structural correlation.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely empirical. So I did that for about a year, and then I got sensitized to these azo dye intermediates. So I was out for a while and got switched to something else. I think I've synthesized some of the polychlorodioxins accidentally. As I look back at what I was making,
uh-huh.
nobody. But it was well known in those days that some people got sensitized to these things. If you got sensitized to it, you went and worked on something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked on.
Well, I noticed there was a sort of a 4-year hole in your publication record.
Yeah,
I assume that has to do with
got a few patents in that time. That was all.
Mm-hmm.
Someone dies, and I worked on petroleum. Oil additives and gasoline additives and of that sort.
Now you were married in 1940.
Yeah.
Can you tell me your wife's name and how you met and a little bit about her influence on your career?
Her name was Jane Ann Wilson, and she, I'd met her in Winnetka. She was going to Vassar, graduated the same year I did. And she was in Winnetka taking care of, well, her parents had died, and she was taking care of a younger brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
And living there, and I'd met her, and we were sort of tentatively engaged, I guess, when I went to work. But in those days, the only way you worked for a while, make sure you had a job before you got married. So having demonstrated I could hold a job for a year, it seemed plausible.
I see. Okay.
He doesn't have any chemical background at all.
He's
not inclined in that direction.
Okay. If later you want to say something about any influence she's had on your career, I'll consider that. And maybe, I think what I'll do is ask you about your children later, if that's all right. Before I get on to your switching jobs, let me ask you about your impressions of the state of organic chemistry at that particular point and physical organic chemistry.
Organic chemistry was largely an empirical art at that point. I rather enjoyed working in the laboratory and having reactions occur and getting product.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found this a very interesting activity. There was sort of stirring interest in why things behaved the way they did. There was a little discussion of this in Peter's courses.
Mm-hmm.
I think the orientation and aromatic substitution was probably one of the first things people began to try to interpret.
Yeah.
Which was still pretty empirical at that point. You have learned these rules.
Was it Ingold and Roberts?
Yeah.
Robinson had some pretty hairy discussions of that in the late 1920s and the early 1930s.
Yeah. Now, this was some of the outside reading in Fuller's course, if I remember.
Mm-hmm.
I think the early Robinson Review.
Mm-hmm.
Two things we read, that and then also a review article by DuPont, who discovered nylon once.
Brothers.
Brothers, yeah. Two two things I remember we were told to go lead outside of class.
So that it wasn't really making any inroads in 1940, the whole idea, even though you had been, the department was sort of oriented.
Well, it was beginning to make some. Yeah. I remember on my PhD oral radio, Frank Westheimer asked me to discuss something which I read in the literature, which I found interesting, which was outside of my thesis research. And so I talked about Indole's work on SN1 and SN2 reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Which I mean, we were encouraged to read these things, and we discussed a little bit.
Okay.
It was a lucky choice.
If you were, this may be an unfair question, but if you were going to run an international symposium in physical organic chemistry in, let's say, 1940, who would have been invited?
Hammett's book had come out then. I guess it was about to come out.
Yeah.
I have another comment on that in a minute. Calvin, I guess, was probably considered active, and Lucas, certainly. Raj. Plausible person. Whelan. That was the most one time.
Okay.
Incidentally, at 1937, when I joined ACS and subscribed to the JACS, and the first article I remember reading with interest and enthusiasm in the first issue was Louis Hammett's paper on sigma rho reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Even at that point, I recognized it as being
you said you had a comment about
I heard Frank Westheimer talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
He just worked with him.
Right. What brought about the switch to U.S. rubber? I know that.
Well, I didn't think I was really getting anywhere with Ash and DuPont. Frank Mayo had gone to U.S. rubber.
Mm-hmm.
And they were starting a fundamental research program in polymer chemistry, sort of underlying their wartime work on synthetic rubber. And he essentially recruited me, contrary, all of which had to be kept slightly under wraps, because in those days there were rather firm non-hiring agreements between major companies.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So I had to resign from DuPont before I could have any open negotiations.
I see. Do you know anything about Mayo's leaving Chicago? I said he was an appointee, but
I think it was part of money, because the salary scale was not very high, and this looked like a really good opportunity. How far you could expect to get at Chicago, sort of in the shadow of Garage.
Yeah, particularly if he was his lieutenant. Now, you moved in about 1942. This was already wartime.
January 43.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Tell me something about U.S. Rubber and about how the groups were set up and so on.
Well, they had Colin Armstrong, who they essentially decided to carry out a set up some groups to do some fundamental research, both to support their program then and to sort of prepare themselves for where they would want to be when the war ended. And the director of research was, his name I'm trying to remember right now.
Was this R.T. Armstrong you mentioned?
No, Tom Gibbons was director of research, and older man, was a strong supporter of this. Hubert Jordan, who was on down the line, believed in it, and Armstrong, who come with them, believed in it. So that they set up a several, sort of a physical chemical one group and an organic group, and Frank came to head the organic group, and the physical group was run by Helen and Rye Hewitt. And it just turned out to be a marvelous time, because it was just the point where you, the principles were around if anybody could see how to apply them.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I got there, Frank had already worked out essentially the mathematical theory of copolymerization and the mathematical theory of chain transfer,
mm-hmm.
and gotten data showing that it worked. So this turned out to be a very exciting and productive period for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like most of these, the company wasn't very good at ever doing anything with its research. So after a while, they lost interest, and this program sort of folded.
Mm-hmm. But you did keep going for a good number of years.
Yeah.
All right. Six or
seven. Went there in the beginning of 43, and I left in 49. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was went off and worked for the government for 6 months during the war.
Mm-hmm. There are a number of people you published with during that period. Of course, you Frank Mayo was one. And then Briggs, Fred Lewis. Can you tell me a little bit about
Fred Lewis? Was a very competent fellow. He had a master's degree from Illinois. He was a very good experimentalist, and he was full of ideas. And he really did well the first good experimental work on the copolymerization problem. He contributed a great deal to this. He got himself a PhD working nights at the same time. Well, he said he didn't need one.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing fine anyhow. And he ended up, I think he's now retired, but he ended up in the silicone division of GE.
Mm-hmm.
Where he worked for a while.
Did he move to GE when Frank Mayo did?
Well, he left about, I left first, then he left, and Frank left.
Mm-hmm. Briggs.
But in that, also in the physical, two other very competent people who left were Ed Hart and Max Matheson, both who ended, were successively the directors of the radiation laboratory at Argonne. They went there and made very successful careers in that sort of work. Raj Ewart and a fellow named Smith, who worked with him, stayed with the company until they retired. But they worked out the theory, did very important work on the theory of emulsion polymerization.
Mm-hmm.
Really, a lot of them. So a very good group there.
Yes, it sounds like it was really extremely strong. Who was K.W. Doak?
Doak?
Doak, I'm sorry.
Well, he was another new PhD who came in about the time I was there. He left and worked in a couple of industrial jobs since. I'm not sure where he is now.
The only reason I ask is because I didn't see him as a co-author in any of your papers, and yet in the copolymerization review, you mentioned him along with Fred Lewis, and I assume that he
He didn't work with me. He worked for he published some things with Frank.
I see. Okay, so he would appear on your name. There were a couple of, I assume that Emmeline Briggs is a woman. And,
she's had a bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm. But she did.
She ended up in Alaska.
I see.
she married a fellow and said, "I want to go to Alaska."
Yeah.
I mean, she was.
There were a couple other women, at least one other, that published on those papers.
Yeah.
Catherine, someone, and these were.
I think they. Well, there were
women who.
There was one PhD. Woman in the group who then became, I think, the head of their chemical library. I don't know what she probably did. The other ones all had bachelor's degrees.
Mm-hmm. And they were mainly technicians
yeah.
for the.
Yeah,
I see. Okay. I think the paper after the Kim Review, the peroxide Kim
yeah.
Review, that you recommended to me was a paper with Emily Briggs. On the mathematical analysis of the copolymerization in a system containing more than two monomers.
Yeah.
And
she did the experimental work,
uh-huh.
did the analysis, and I did the mathematics.
Okay, and did that have some practical value? Did you feel that it was a significant paper only because it was just an extension of the mathematical analysis that you've managed? You felt that was an important paper?
It has been used, I think, in technology.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of a further confirmation scheme work that you're able to extend it to
yes.
all the components.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of okay. as much a tour de force as an important.
Okay. You were a technical aide in the MSRD from 45 to 46.
Yeah.
How did that happen and what did it involve?
Well, I guess. My wife had an effect on that because she went down to Washington to visit some friends and ran into an old friend of hers whose husband was now the head of the legal department of OSRD at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he told her that they were looking for people. So that's how I got a...
Oh. See, what did you do down there?
Well, I worked for the... group that were developing new drugs for antimalarials.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially I was sort of a coordinator in the office, keeping track and visiting all of the contracts they had.
Mm-hmm.
It was a valuable experience to me, and then I got to meet an awful lot of people around the country and travel around and visit a lot of laboratories.
Yeah. Now this is already after the... This is either close to the end of the war or after the end of the war.
Well, the war was still on when I started,
mm-hmm.
and I stayed on the beginning of that of calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the chief thing I got out of it, well, was this chance to that travel around. Speed Marvel was an important figure in this, and he advised me to go visit all the contracts. And I remember the war looked like it was just about going to leave, and my boss had gone to Peru because he wanted to see something, so I wrote myself up a travel order to go visit all the contracts before the war ended. And the war ended as I was going through Hagerstown, Maryland. My boss was away, and I didn't see any reason to cancel my trip, so I finished my tour.
Were there any significant changes in the organic community after the war? The organic community or the physical organic community that you could put your fingers on?
Yeah, there was certainly much more interest in reaction mechanisms. A certain amount of work had happened during the war. People hadn't had much of a chance to get together, so there was this fine time after the war when everybody was getting together and exchanging their ideas and everything they'd thought up in the meantime. Winstein had already started his work. And there was really quite a lot of backlog of stuff to think about and talk about and do then. So there was a real atmosphere of excitement. And to me, one of the most interesting things was that 47, I went to a Faraday Society meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And here we heard the British had been doing a lot of interesting work in
free radical chemistry, which about oxidation and things of this sort.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned all about that at that point.
I see.
Now that was a very valuable, exciting experience to me.